Hello, hello. It's another case of Mixtape and Identity, and my guest this week is Milo Edwards. Thank you so much for joining me. This is episode 85 of Mixtape and Identity with Milo Edwards. You'll probably know Milo already. He is a stand-up comedian and also a prolific podcaster. He's got Trash Future, Masters of Our Domain, and Glue Factory, all excellent podcasts. I was very, very excited to get him on the show. So Milo sent me his list. I think there's quite a few classics in there, like songs that I knew but hadn't really listened to in a while, which is always very, very nice for me. Also a beautiful Russian song, which I'd never come across before, but it's a massive hit in Russia. So that was really good as well. I'll just say quickly, if you're new to the show here, if this is your first time listening, if you're not sure what I'm talking about, basically I've sent Milo a list of prompts for songs. He sent me back a list of songs, and the show is us talking through the songs that he picked and why he picked them. So if you want to follow along with the music, then you can just click the link in the description of the podcast. It'll take you to Spotify. All the songs are there in a playlist. This is a very, very funny episode. Milo is just hilarious, and I had a great time chatting with him. So yeah, we'll say no more, we'll dive right in. This is episode 85 of Mixtape and Identity with Milo Edwards. Like, your music listening habits, like, how often do you actually listen to music at the moment?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say I go in like fits and starts. I've kind of gotten back into listening to podcasts again, which I hadn't done in a while.
Sure.
But I drive a lot, so I would quite often listen to music in the car, or at least the radio.
Right, okay.
But then I find if I'm at the gym or something, I'll probably more often listen to a podcast. So it kind of depends, but I don't know. But yeah, like probably most days at some point,
okay,
if I'm in the car. Yeah.
Okay. And are you trying to find new music when you're listening now, or is it more just sort of the stuff you're familiar with?
Sometimes, yeah. I've been going through. So my car that I've currently got is extremely a 2012 ass car, in that it has this feature where it will save CDs to a hard drive in the car.
Wow,
there's a very narrow span, like in terms of time, where
idea
of a car having a hard drive that could save music was possible, but also it hadn't been completely superannuated by much better way. And so the car that I have is from precisely that era. And my parents have like a massive CD collection, and I live in my parents' old house, so I've got all of these CDs. So I've been like gradually listening to like loads and loads of CDs in the house, some of which are more or less familiar than others.
Right. Excellent. I love when people say when people say that dates it. I love it when it's that, but it's like 1 month of a year is the thing that dates it to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, like when George Galloway pretended to be a cat, remember that? Yeah, that dates it. Yeah. It was approximately then. We were all Rula Lenska that week.
Oh dear. Yeah, I think like driving typically tends to be one of those like if I'm listening to music in the car, it has to be stuff I'm familiar with or stuff that I know. That's not my actively trying to find new things or trying to like experiment with my music taste. This is an activity, and I need specific driving music for it. I think the gym.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind new music in the car, but it is a risk.
It's a risk.
I a lot of the time I'm driving my girlfriend places, and I'll get her to do the music. But then that also, she hates doing that because she would rather be like watching TikToks. So it's like an imposition. I'm like, this is your contribution to the car journey.
Right. Okay.
It's doing the music.
Yeah. Fair enough. Are your tastes similar enough that you're happy with whatever she'll put on?
To an extent. Yeah. Although I mean, she is a big fan of the 1975, which I don't. It's hard to summarize my feelings about the 1975. I don't really dislike their music.
Yeah.
It just doesn't affect me in any way.
Right.
I'm just like, yeah, that sounds like it could be on an advert.
Yeah.
Like the advert would be fine.
Yeah.
Probably be an advert for like, you know, the new Ford C-Max or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't be an advert for like a payday loan.
No.
But you know, I'm not in the market for a Ford C-Max, so.
Yeah, no, you've
got a car that writes CDs to a hard drive.
Famously.
So. Why? You've already perfected it. You've nailed
it. Ford, I put this question to Henry Ford. Can the Ford C-Max do that? I think not. His silence speaks volume.
Yeah. My it's funny to say that. My wife is really into the 1975, and I'm also not.
Oh, you're a fellow sufferer.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, I there was a period in time where I was very, very judgmental about music. And I think they came around right towards the tail end of that, where all of the songs sounded the same and I hated his stupid voice and I don't like looking at him. And I've not quite let go of that slightly irrational hatred of them.
Yeah.
So they do have some songs that like genuinely move me, but for the most part, no thanks.
All of their songs really do sound the same. They've got about three or four templates.
Yeah.
And then once you know those templates, you can just make up a 1975 song off the bat.
Their first album in particular was just that it was like one sound, basically. You could just copy and paste. It was, yeah, I'm not a fan.
I feel very like Daisy's wearing socks at the petrol station. Yeah, like, you know, that could be a B-side. I know so much more about the 1975 than I ever thought I would.
Yeah, I know. It does get to that point, where you know too much about them to make fun of them. Like, you've got too much material now.
And a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I think the 1975, their music's not bad, but I just can't stand Matty Healy. And I'm like, no, I think he's funny. I'm surprised he makes such forgettable music. He's quite entertaining. Like, he's really rude to journalists. I think that's funny. Like,
that is funny.
And he's a heroin addict. That's cool. Not enough rock stars are heroin addicts these days. You know, bring that back.
Yeah.
It was a better time.
Yeah. Although I remember seeing him on Nevermind the Buzzcocks, and he's just talking about potato waffles, and I just thought, I do not want to.
Very specific.
I can't remember what it was exactly, but he was just talking about rock and roll lifestyle and how they all love potato waffles. And I'm fairly sure this was at the peak of his heroin stage, so I think he was just trying to.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was trying to do, but I just remember
sort of thing a heroin addict would eat the potato waffle.
Yeah, I just remember thinking, like, I've never wanted to spend time less with a human being. But anyway.
You ever seen that video where it's like he's like signing stuff for fans and this girl comes up to him and he's like, what's your name? And she says, Dervla.
Yeah.
And he just goes, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just unnecessarily rude. There's no need for that whatsoever. Yeah. But yeah, like, again. Yeah.
Like an American pop star would be like, oh my God, how lovely. How do you spell that? And I'm like, no, say what?
Yeah. He was good on that chicken shop thing as well. He's pretty funny on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, now her I can't stand.
Oh, really?
But we digress.
Okay.
Yeah, there's just something, oh, I don't know. Like, there's, I don't know how you turn, like, being, like, not charismatic into a brand when, like, the whole thing is that you're an interviewer. Like, I don't know.
I know what you mean.
Perplexing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one, what do you call it? Bobby Altonoff or something?
Oh, yeah, she's even more annoying, the American one.
But it's an act. Like, that's a, that's a thing.
People
like to watch. I do not understand that. That's, yeah.
No.
I can't get my head around that at all.
TikTok in general, it's a thumbs down from me. And I'm on there.
I know.
But I'm shaking my head the whole time so people know I disagree with it.
Yeah. I've talked about this before. My algorithm is awful because, like, I am...
Yeah.
The things I watch and the things I look at comments on are the things that I hate the most. Like those, you know, those auditors who fly drones around and then get really obnoxious when people tell them to stop flying their drones around.
Oh, yeah. Those guys are awesome. They're all insane.
And sovereign citizens and all that kind of shit. Like,
yeah,
I'll watch that for hours on end and have the worst time and then go right back to it.
There's nothing funnier than watching one of those. The ones I prefer, though, are not the ones that fly drones. They're the ones that just go around like a town center filming.
Right.
And you're just in like a, what was it? We were watching one. We do a stream where we watch YouTube videos sometimes. And we watched one where a guy was in like, it was like Buckingham Town Centre or something. Right. And he's like just filming. And then all these people in like high-vis vests that say like, you know, unacceptable behaviour team on the back turn up. I love one of these like mad jobs you can get in Britain where it's like, oh, I'm like the fake Stasi that works for WH Smith. Like, and it's like, what? Like Matty Healy voice. What?
Yeah.
By the power of Ryman's, I'm compelled to move you on from this place, you know? And so they're just like arguing with him. They're like, well, you can't film here. And he's like, yeah, I can. It's the street. And then what you realize is how you can just melt people's brains by just refusing to go along with their script. Because he's just going like, no, I'm going to keep filming you. And they're like, well, you can't. And he's like, well, what are you going to do? Yeah. He's like, you can't touch me.
Yeah.
And then one of them was like, I am a Buckingham Ranger. And they're like, sorry. Yeah. Sworn to protect W.H. Smith by blood oath.
Yeah.
So yeah, love those guys. Great content.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, music. My podcast is about music. Mm. We simply must get back to it. right. We'll dive into the playlist then. So song one is a song you fell in love with straight away. So you went with In the Blood by John Mayer.
Yeah. This was a difficult category for me.
Okay.
Because I definitely have like recency bias.
Yeah, sure.
With this. But this is a song that I really liked recently. I like John Mayer in general, but I didn't know this album very well. I think it's from Search for Everything. And it's good.
Fair enough. Were you into John Mayer before this album or before this song?
Yeah. I'm kind of I have a past as a sort of recovering guitar guy.
Okay.
So
sure.
I'm like the the demographic makeup of a John Mayer concert is like, you know, former teenage girls.
Yeah.
Guess is all women who are older than. But, you know, the love of John Mayer comes from a particular era.
Yeah, no, generally, I get you,
and it's usually, you know, between the ages of about 14 and 19.
Yeah.
And then I'm in like the 10%, like the segregated section for the away fans, right, where it's like me and all the 40 something dads,
right,
who are like, you know, the stuff he's doing here with the blues guitar is really interesting, you know, the overlays with the jazz elements and the, you know, it's a lot more complex than it gets credit for.
Yeah It's my brother talks about him a lot, like he's in that conversation a lot more than I would have thought of, like best guitarists in the world or best guitarists of all time. My brother refers to Neon quite a lot. It's like a live performance of Neon, which is like incredible and
an insanely complicated song. John Mayer is like he's a sort of fascinating like area of the Venn diagram, because I think in terms of being like a musical savant, he's like a generational talent.
Yeah,
but he makes kind of like adult contemporary easy listening but like kind of a bit syrupy and romantic stuff that mostly appeals to young women, and it's a genre of music which like I'm not saying rightly but it's a genre of music that isn't generally very well respected on the whole, I would say, you know. It's kind of, he's in the same genre basically as like Taylor Swift, like more or less, he is like, you know, doing stuff that's like, if you start getting into his music, it's very complicated and there's like a hell of a lot going on.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like that, because superficially it's very, you know, sort of,
yeah, I know what you mean,
pop love song type stuff.
It's interesting as well, because I think as a person he exists potentially in the wrong era for him. Obviously he's doing very well for himself, but I don't think he would, like 20 years ago, I don't think his music would get as much scrutiny in terms of like the lyrical content, because I think there is an obsession now with music, like artists need to be interesting and they need to be saying something and they need to be like ambitious, but I think there's an obsession now with like they need to be right, the things they say need to be correct and according to like the status quo, and I'm trying to avoid
it's good job Eric Clapton's not really releasing much new stuff now, isn't it?
Yeah, Van Morrison
he was right about cocaine, you can say that.
Yeah, sure I'm trying not to get into the whole like, you know, music's gone woke kind of I feel like that's where my thought is going, and I'm trying to fight against that very hard, but
look, music was always a bit woke.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, but I think there are songs that are analyzed of his that are like, you know, sometimes the songs he puts out, you think maybe does he actually see a woman as a person or just something to fuck. And you know, I don't think that would get as much scrutiny in the 70s or 80s compared to
I choose not to ask myself those questions,
right? Sure.
Yeah, that's okay. It's the better way to enjoy John Mayer on the whole.
But I honestly, I'm sort of coming around to the idea that that's maybe the best way to be, and that's possibly wrong, but yeah, like that's what I mean. Like, I don't think artists need to be right. They can like take a firm stance on something, but that doesn't necessarily, I don't have to agree with it for that to be an interesting point of view to hear.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Fine. I'm glad I got your approval on that one.
There's got to be a staunch unionist somewhere who loves Sunday Bloody Sunday, you know. Hey, tell you what, it's a tune. Even though I think the army were within their rights.
Oh, I see you've met my dad.
huge Bono fan.
You've no idea how close we are to something there.
Yeah. Big Union Jack on the porch.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to say not quite, just as a disclaimer. On both counts.
Not quite. He's more into the Edge.
He's more of a Bruce Springsteen fan, and he's more of a religious Protestant than a flag shagger. But anyway.
Fair enough.
Right. So that was In the Blood. We've covered that. Song two is a song that took you a while. So you went with I Don't Want to Talk About It by Rod Stewart.
Yeah. So my growing up, my mum and my sister and my aunt were huge Rod Stewart fans, and I think in the sort of contrarianness that is my nature, I for years resisted Rod Stewart, and I could think of nothing worse than liking Rod Stewart. And now I find myself in the invidious position of liking Rod Stewart, and everyone I know thinks it's incredibly embarrassing that I like Rod Stewart.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they've inceptioned me. I've been fucked over by my late mother, my sister, and my aunt. And now, you know, some of my friends will get out of my car at certain points in the journey.
Oh, okay, sure.
When Rod Stewart comes on, not for any other reason.
What was it that turned around for you? Like, was it like, did you just keep listening to it, or was it, is it just,
I don't know what it is about Rod Stewart, you know. He's like, I think because he doesn't really, there aren't like a lot of Rod Stewart songs that are, you know, like get the party started type.
Sure.
I mean, there are some, I mean, yeah. You know, you've got I mean more the Faces stuff, I guess, but like, you know, that stuff does exist. Because I think I was, you know, when you're younger, you have less of a tolerance for like a ballad or something.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when you listen to a song like this now, you're like, yeah, life is shit, actually. You know what, Rod? You've got a point. I can't believe I doubted you when I was 12. you know, I often don't want to talk about it, in fact.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And also, I think that Rod Stewart kind of, he actually lives like down the road from where I grew up.
All right, okay.
And he kind of has this sort of like Cockney Alan Partridge energy. Like, I remember, sort of tail end of COVID, my mum and I watching, he'd like put out some video of him and all of his mates like filling in potholes in this country road that goes to his house, and he's like, the state of the potholes, I can't even get my Ferrari down here anymore. It's just like Rod Stewart, all 5'7" of him in like a high-vis vest, like you know, worth £100 million, just filling in potholes with a shovel. And I'm like, yeah, this is the kind of lunatic that we should nurture in British public life.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm well on board with that behaviour, yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you mean about the contrarian thing, because I had that with my dad. Like I mentioned, Bruce Springsteen, and he was really into Van Morrison, again, before he went mad.
All right, yeah.
But yeah, again, artists that I go back to now, and I'm like, yeah, he was probably right, and the kind of stuff that I was telling him was much better than his stuff, was like Keane and Snow Patrol and stuff that, you know, I'm not exactly
Keane is a very funny like rebellious teen band to like.
Yeah,
because I think in England that would be a very like dad band to like, but maybe there's something so powerfully English about Keane that in Northern Ireland that's quite rebellious in itself.
Yeah, I don't know what they just had some nice songs, and I just thought they were a great band. Remember, I went to see them once, and they introduced their bass player on stage, and then gestured to a laptop on a chair, and I thought, this isn't what I want from a live show. But
no,
yeah.
Well, and also the lead singer, what is his name? Tom something. He does be looking like a newborn baby sat on a man's shoulders. He has that odd, you know, it's a weird head.
Yeah.
He looks like Philip II of Spain, but like but also a toddler.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, I hope he doesn't listen.
No.
Somewhere Only We Know wasn't bad. You know?
Yeah.
Even if he does look like a toddler.
No, I think that's I think that's fair. Okay, great. Right, song three is a song from your introduction to music. So you went for Baby One More Time by Britney Spears.
Yeah. And I think that this actually follows on perfectly from what we were talking about before, which I think this would be a song that at one stage in my life I would be embarrassed to think was good, probably.
Right.
But it's probably the most recognizable two-note melody ever written.
Yeah.
And I think this was potentially... I'm not sure if this was literally the first album I ever bought, but I think it was among the first. It was certainly the first CD, I think, that I ever bought.
Excellent.
Why I bought this, I'm not sure. I can't really remember. It's very vague. I bought it at an airport. That's what I can remember about it.
Right, okay.
I think what happened actually was I bought an M&M CD, and my mum... under my dad's supervision, and then when I emerged from the shop with this, my mum frog marched me back and made me exchange it for something else, and I ended up with whatever was the album called. Baby One More Time, it might have been called something else. Oh, is it called Oops I Did It Again, the album? I think that was the titular track. But yeah, this is a great pop song, and it feels like it harkens back to an era when like you had people like Quincy Jones writing pop songs for people.
Yes.
In a way that just kind of isn't the case anymore.
Yeah.
Like you just, you know, just like anyone, like regardless of whether they just have a pop song, they just be like, oh, a team of like old school fucking, you know, coke on every fader, like, you know, musical juggernauts writing hits for them. So you had like amazing songs by, I mean, not necessarily leveling this at Britney Spears, but amazing songs by crap artists a lot of the time in that period,
Which
absolutely. I think you don't get as much anymore.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I've been on, I think, maybe similar journey to yourself as with pop music. I mean, I really liked S Club when they were on the scene. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I went through a teenage phase where you could not put me near any pop music. It was just awful to me. It was poison. I was so up my ass about my music taste. It had to be guitar based. It had to be bands. It had to mean something. And I didn't say this, you know, full of the knowledge that I've just said, like, one of the bands I liked was Keane. But but primarily I was into, like old rock bands and things like that.
Heavy stuff, like Keane.
Yeah, really. Yeah, really deep and meaningful stuff.
When the big toddler says, "Open that pit up," everyone. I tell you what, when Bend and Break comes on, people are windmilling.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes off. But yeah. I was thinking about this recently because I've been talking about this quite a bit on the show. I genuinely think I was right. I genuinely think pop music was better when I liked pop music, and it was bad when I stopped liking it, because when I stopped liking it was at the peak of like X Factor and Pop Idol and that kind of stuff.
Oh god, yeah.
Where it was all very mass produced, manufactured, cynical, and obviously there's good stuff that came out at that time as well, but primarily garbage. So yeah, this is one of those things I look back on and think, yeah, I was obnoxious, but I think I was right. I stand by it.
Well, I mean, obviously, like I came close to picking some Steve Brookstein tracks for this. But yeah, he just didn't quite make the cut, unfortunately. But he's an artist I go back to a lot.
Oh man, I was talking about him the other day and I had to Google him. I don't know how that's still in your brain as a reference?
Oh yeah, I've got all of it. I remember I had a with the pods that I do, we're quite matey with Uber Butler, and he's someone who always gets himself into like insane situations. I remember once as part of something he was doing online, he managed to really piss off the Alexandra Burke stan community.
Oh really?
And he was like, yeah, and like someone told me this, and they were like, oh yeah, like the fucking Burke stans are after you. And I was like, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? And he was like, no, apparently they're vicious.
Oh really?
They really think Alexandra Burke is the best pop star out there.
Yeah.
Which is, imagine, I mean, it's weird enough to devote your life to like Beyonce, but to devote your life to Alexandra Burke is mental.
Maybe that's why they're vicious, because like it takes a certain level of commitment to convince yourself that Burke is the way to go.
Yeah.
So when you're locked in, you're really locked in, like a Scientologist.
Yeah. Yeah, or like people who eat jelly deals. You're like, you're really deep in there. You've really convinced yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, you can just get a meal deal from the supermarket. Like, it's not the war anymore.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, song 4 is the song that makes you happy. So you went for Say It Ain't So by Weezer.
Yeah. Again, this was quite a tricky category for me.
Yeah.
Because I guess that's what music is supposed to do generally.
Sure.
I recalled being my girlfriend is 2 years younger than me, and I sometimes feel these like micro generational gaps.
Uh-huh.
And one of these was when we were at a late night party at the Fringe, and Say It Ain't So by Weezer came on, and being quite pissed. Me and all of my 30-something friends were going mental, and she was looking at me absolutely nonplussed, like, what is this song? I've never heard it before in my life. And I'm busy going, like, you know, fucking this potion of Stevens. She's like, what are you talking about? How do you know any of the lyrics to this song, which as far as I'm concerned did not exist until 30 seconds ago?
Yeah Very similar energy to your car and the CDs. Just that little moment in time where Weezer was everything.
Yeah, they're such a... I really, you know what, Weezer's one of those bands where I don't think about them that often, but whenever I do, I'm like, man, Weezer are great.
Yeah.
Like, I saw my first, actually, because I wasn't particularly into them as like a young, like I wasn't into them like at the time, if you like. But I went to Reading Festival when I was 17. A long time ago, if you're following along with your Milo's age bingo card at home. And they were one of the headline-ish acts, and one of my mates was a fan, so we went along. And I remember they opened by playing a cover of Teenage Dirtbag by Wheatus, because they're constantly confused with Wheatus, and they thought that would be funny. And I was like, that is funny. I'm going to like this band.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and I've liked them ever since. So it's been a long time. It's been nearly 14 years that I've liked Weezer officially.
Yeah. Weezer for me are like, sometimes, like I like a lot of their songs, but sometimes they're a little bit like Anchorman to me, in that they it's much better in my head.
Oh,
it's not something I want to revisit. I enjoy the memories that go along with it, and I enjoy like singing little bits in my head, but would I listen to them often? Probably not. I think my tastes have evolved since. But
yeah,
I like, honestly, listening to this was great. When you sent this list to me, I was like, I was really excited to hear the song again.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I love saying so. I think it would be, if someone was like, had never heard of Weezer, and it was like, pick a Weezer song for them to listen to, it's probably this, or maybe like Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
In terms of the pure banger quality.
Yeah, so that's what I think. So. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, even that new Weezer album wasn't bad. The single off of that, I forget what it was called. Whenever that came out, 2021.
Oh, really?
They played it on the radio a lot. Yeah. There was a Weezer single in like 2021. There was an album, and I was like, I was worried. You know, I was like, oh, Weezer gonna let me down here. I'm now. I'm trying to figure out what this is by Googling, but okay. So the album was called Van Weezer.
Okay.
Maybe Hero or The End of the Game. Those are the two that have blue links. I don't know. Look, this has been a very dead end story, but the point is there was a decent Weezer single that came out at some point during or after the pandemic.
Cool.
Many years after you would think it would be possible for them to still release a good song. So you know what? Rivers Cuomo haters. yeah.
Cool. Alrighty. Well, that's Weezer.
That is Weezer.
Song 5 is a song that makes you sad. So you went for With a Little Help from My Friends by Joe Cocker.
Yeah. Very, a very pedestrian story here. It was the reflection music at my mother's funeral.
Okay.
Yeah, it probably reminds me of that. I don't think there really are songs that make me sad. I think there are probably songs that I listen to when I'm in a different mood, but there probably are certain songs that remind me of sad things.
Sure. So yeah,
that would probably fit into this category, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I have some of those, like, songs that, like, I associate with particular moments, and like, closer to the time could have ruined my day if they were on in a Starbucks or something. Like, it's just, like, just trigger something. So would you ever choose to listen to it now?
Yeah, sometimes I guess. I was never like a massive Joe Cocker fan particularly. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good song, but it's not something I would ever put on particularly, but not for the reason that it was the music at my mother's funeral, but just because it's not really in my like orbit of things that I would put on.
Right.
I wouldn't turn it off if it was on, if you know.
Right,
what I mean.
Sure.
It's a good and a great cover also.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great song.
There were some contenders for the cover category, but I felt this fit better into this category.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I don't know. I think it's weird when you've kind of. I wouldn't say that I'm a particularly emotional person on the whole, but when you've gone through quite a lot of, like, I guess, you know, in the most scare quotes possible way, traumatic events.
Right.
It's weird. It's weird the things that like. Trigger stuff like that, like they're just sort of like, I get like, man, like nice mums fucking set me off.
Oh, just any, like any mum,
give it, just bizarre, it, like just weird, I don't know, like the amount, yeah, just anything like strange, bizarre, like otherwise upbeat moments of like TV or film completely unpredictably,
right?
Just like some sort of like wholesome motherliness sometimes. I'm just like, you know, I'm just gone.
Yeah,
but then just, you know, something explicit death or what, like, fine, you know.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Grief is a sneaky fucker. I've had the same thing where it's just like completely random things will just, or I'll just be in a particular mindset and I'll think, oh, I need to talk to this person, and then yeah, like, oh, that's not that wasn't the plan for today, but now that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Now here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're on notice, grief.
Yeah.
Tighten it up.
Yeah.
Get a schedule. We can't be working around you.
Put it in writing. I'll see if I have a room in my diary.
That's right.
But yeah, no, I think for me, some of those songs that I've had that I've put me in that mindset that, as I say, like closer to the time would have like potentially ruined my day, they're quite nice things to have now. It's like, you know, there's little orbs in Inside Out. It's just a thing that I can reach for, like if I would need to be in that mindset, if I need to think about someone, if I need to, you know, let an emotion out, there are certain songs you can just sort of pick out and then I'm right back there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think, yeah, I listen to different music depending on the mood I'm in, for sure.
Yeah.
Certain times you're just like, oh, that wouldn't do for now. That wouldn't be right. That wouldn't be the correct. And it's weird how I think sometimes certain songs have like a momentary effect. I remember once being at it was like maybe about a year after my dad died. I was at another funeral. I go to a lot of funerals. I'm a big hitter at the funeral game. Sure. For a family friend, and I remember, and sort of bizarrely, the music, the reflection music was That's Life, which is a very cheesy song.
Yeah.
And then I was like, why am I crying at That's Life? Why am I? This song has never affected me any other. Like, a song which is so like, what are you going to do about it? See, that's life, buddy. Yeah. Oh, well, the newspaper boys got replaced by the automobile. You know, like, it's like, why is this absurd song sang by a man with trousers up to his nipples affecting me emotionally in any way?
Yeah.
Like, how dare a man in a trilby emotionally affect me? Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a juxtaposition sometimes as well, I think, is the thing. It's that conflict between the two things that just like will send you over the edge. But right, song six is a song to relax to. So you went for King for a Day by Jamiroquai.
I thought that Jamiroquai merited being on the list. I kind of grew up with Jamiroquai, I guess, because my youngest sister is 14 years older than me, because we're very spread out in my family.
Okay.
But she was the only one of my siblings that was like still at home when I was a kid.
Right.
And so I used to go places a lot as a kid in my sister's car.
Right.
And her boyfriend's car, which we'll come on to with another song.
Okay.
And she really loved Jamiroquai. I think my sister owns every single Jamiroquai album, or at least did at one stage.
Excellent.
I think they're one of those bands where, like, you know, if you know, you know. I feel like Jamiroquai, they're so odd.
Yeah.
Like, JK is a weird man, and he makes weird music. But in a fun way. I feel like I've been sort of like indoctrinated with it.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely one of those bands where I'll sometimes put Jamiroquai on and my girlfriend will be like, what the fuck is this again? who is this man who sounds like a woman? Why?
Yeah.
Why are we listening to this? Yeah. Why is there didgeridoo? Why are there wind chimes? Why is his hat so big? These are all questions you could ask. But it's simpler sometimes to enjoy a Jamiroquai, album track, such as King for a Day.
Right. Yeah. I listened to a good bit of Jamiroquai when I was younger, because when I went through a phase of music when, like, during, you know, the Pirate Bay era of listening to music, where I would search for a band by their discography rather than just like the single that I liked, and I'd try to listen to as much of their music as possible. And Jamiroquai was a journey for me, because there were like some of the, like, the hits that I knew, and they're like big funky music, like big funky songs, and then you get into some weirder stuff, and then like the more you listen, the more like, what is this guy okay? Like there's quite a range of sounds going on.
Oh, like, yeah,
cover a lot.
Half of even a good Jamiroquai album is unlistenably bad.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be like, you know, there'll be one song on like an otherwise good album that's like mostly motorbike sounds. And you're like, why? Why, JK? Why have you done this? I mean, Return of the Space Cowboy is all like music that could be playing in a lift. I'm trying to remember the titles of fucking Jamiroquai albums now. I remember them by the pictures on the front.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Traveling Without Moving is a good album. A Funk Odyssey and Synchronized are probably my two favorite Jamiroquai albums.
Right.
Emergency on Planet Earth is okay. Return of the Space Cowboy, I loathe. It's so bad.
Yeah.
Dynamite, I'm not very familiar with. Those are my verdicts on the various.
I love these reviews. It's going straight on the poster. Dynamite had Don't Give Hate a Chance on it, which I loved.
Okay. I'm not sure I even know the song, surprisingly, for me.
It's great. But, like, you know, also, if you know any of the sort of funkier Jamiroquai songs, you've heard it. It's
yeah, okay.
He's not breaking new ground on that one, but those are kind of the songs that I enjoy the most with Jamiroquai.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I did. But yeah, Jamiroquai in general, great. And they have a lot of range, as you said. Like, King for a Day is very kind of like slow, has this kind of like synth harpsichord thing going on. It's very, it has a very weird kind of almost 70s quality to it. But then you can listen to stuff like, I don't know, like Canned Heat or Cosmic Girl or something, which is very like, you know, electro pop 2000s.
I know. I was going to say, if you watch the scene in Napoleon Dynamite and then listen to this song, you probably not associate them as the same band straight away.
It is lovely.
I mean, you said about like about your music listening, so like, do you ever put on songs to relax, or is it just sort of, you know, things that you feel a bit chilled when you're listening to them?
I guess I do sometimes. How often do I relax, though? So that's the big question,
right?
Quite often. I listen to music a lot when I'm doing other things, so like if I'm like cooking or driving, or if we've got people over or something. And then I guess I kind of I have that weird thing where, because what I used to do as a hobby, sort of stand up, became my job,
right?
And then now my work life between sort of podcasts and stand up and stuff is so like busy and so stressful,
mm-hmm.
that all I really do in my free time, other than like, you know, socialize and chores, is like nothing. It's like I sit in front of the television and I watch something while I'm on my phone.
That is
my life. Like I'm actualized in other parts of my life. Like, I don't need to learn to do like watercolor painting or whatever. I just need like 3 to 4 hours a day where I just do nothing. And I find that sometimes like music isn't sufficiently stimulating to like, you know, be the white noise that allows my brain to turn off. And so music for me is more often an accompaniment to like other things rather than something I do on its own.
I have the same sometimes. Like recently we've been sitting watching TV in the evening and we've been trying to get into like some new shows that are actually good. Like, it took us forever to watch The Bear.
Great show.
Yeah, but you know, but all takes a little bit of energy, because I mean, certain episodes in particular are quite stressful.
But cooking,
like, yeah, but quite a lot of the time now, when my wife asks me what I want to watch, I tell her Modern Family, because I don't watch it. I'll just, yeah, that's on, and I have some moments that I chuckle, and then the rest of the time I can sit on my phone and not have to concentrate on anything.
That would be too far for me. That would be like a form of torture, I think, Modern Family. I have the comedy thing where, like, the one thing I cannot stand is like bad comic writing. Did you see on Twitter like the other week, people were sharing clips from shows they like, and then there was like a whole thing of like Modern Family clips, and it's like, oh, who's got that one Modern Family clip? And every clip someone posted of Modern Family, I was like, sorry, do you fucking think this is funny? Is that why you've posted this? Have you received a head injury of some kind? Like, what am I? Like, we exist in a world where, like, you know, like Curb Your Enthusiasm and like I'm Alan Partridge and stuff like exist, and you're posting this clip of like a man camply pulling a face and going, how funny is that? Because there's a man saying something racist, and there's a gay man there going, oh no, like what? Like, is that comedy to you? Yeah, it's like when you know. So when you meet someone in the wild who like likes Michael Bublé, you're like, well, it's professionally put together, but what really drew you in there? Was it the way he sang Santa Buddy?
Oh, so. I've talked about Santa Buddy on this show before. That winds me up something serious.
Like, song that makes you sad, Santa Buddy.
I honestly would stick that on the list. Like, how insecure do you have to be like, no, I'm mates with Santa. I don't want to fuck Santa, guys. No, stop saying it. Stop saying it.
I'm not fucking Santa. I'm dapping him up.
Yeah. We're mates. We're boys.
Me and Santa are going out. We're doing some coke. We're going to the strip club.
Yeah. No homo.
Just straight stuff.
Yeah. There's something in ho, ho, ho. No homo. Anyway. I'll let the listener piece that one together. Right, so
no ho homo. That's as close as I can get.
Yeah, Yeah, I think that's fine. Yeah, maybe that's sometimes that's why I leave it. Sometimes that is because it's not worth it. We'll just.
Yeah, my brain has to complete it. You know,
Fair enough.
You've laid a sort of comedic crossword puzzle before me, and I have to finish it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Song 7 is a song from your preteen years. So you've gone with "Woman Trouble" by Artful Dodger, featuring Robbie Gray.
A song from my sister's boyfriend's car.
Okay.
Very much so. I was discussing these answers a bit with my girlfriend last night. I was on the sofa, and then she was like, "Yeah, I always find it weird when I remember that you like garage," because I think I think she kind of forgets that I grew up in Essex, and I feel like to me Essex is like the heartland of garage.
Right.
It was like, you know, people in London were into something slightly cooler, I feel like. But garage, like, that was the sweet spot for Essex in, like, the late 90s and the early 2000s.
Yeah.
People fucking... The Artful Dodger was king. He ruled Essex.
Right.
Like a feudal lord.
Right.
Yeah. An amazingly prolific man.
Yeah.
And a pickpocket as well. I mean, you know, he's done it all. He really has. For a man who must have been 160 years old at the time, he was having an incredible turn of it. I really like garage. I think there's something, and I also, now that I work with a phenomenal amount of Americans, it's a great genre to explain to Americans because they don't know what it is at all. And also the genres that it emerged from are also things that they don't really have, like jungle. And I think if you, because now like stuff like grime music is so internationally popular,
sure.
And I think it essentially emerged out of like garage, really. Whereas I think if you don't know, people kind of want to associate it more with like hip hop because that's obviously like an important genre of black music. But it's much more, and obviously like garage was quite a sort of big black genre of music in the UK as well. But it was obviously a bit more mixed because there's such a smaller black community in the UK. There's a really interesting genealogy to like a lot of these like kind of weird UK based music genres that have sort of remained kind of cosseted within the UK. I've always really liked garage. There's something, I don't know, it's so distinctive, it sounds so weird, and it's also so dated but in like a fun way.
Right.
Like that kind of, that they all, like every song has the same drum beat in it.
Yeah.
Like no one ever considered changing the drum pattern on the drum machine.
It was like a, where it was just like this is the genre, and the genre meant the beat.
Yeah.
And we'll mix things up on top of that slightly, but you know, it has to be this beat for it to be this genre.
Yeah. And so many just like mad song. Have you ever seen that interview with Asher D on like, I think it was on like the on the Graham Norton show or something, where they're asking him like why So Solid Crew came, or how they came up with the idea for 21 Seconds. And he was the track had to be a certain length, and then we worked it out, and like if everyone was going to rap on it, then we each had 21 seconds. So that's why we called it 21 Seconds. It's just like, the explanation of it, but I feel like if you're from the UK, you've heard the song 21 Seconds to Go by So Solid Crew.
Yeah.
If you've not, look it up, because only the late 90s could have produced such an opus.
Oh, that's so good. Having to explain that on Graham Norton is hilarious, because you must know that that's not an interesting anecdote as you're explaining it.
Yeah. Oh wow, it was 2001. I correct myself. Same year. The long late 90s of 2001. It was pre 9/11. Look, the 90s ended at 9/11. We all know this.
Yeah. Y2K messed a lot of things up as well. Like we thought it was going to end, and then it kept going. So still the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. Just imagine going over and be like, "Oh, lovely." And I always loved 21 Seconds. Can you just tell me how did you? Yeah. Oh, yes, of course. Lisa Mafia. How could I forget? Yeah.
All right, perfect. Song 8 is a cover, so you went for I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett.
Yeah, I'd forgotten this was a cover. I had to like Google covers because I was trying to. I had that thing where like I was like, "There's so many great covers, and I cannot think of a single one."
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then this, and I was like, "This is such a great song."
Yeah.
This is a real. This is one of those songs where I don't own it. I don't have a copy of it anywhere.
Uh-huh.
But whenever it comes on, I'm like, "Fuck yeah."
Yeah.
It's a song they play in bars a lot. If I go into a bar and they're playing Joan Jett, I Love Rock and Roll, I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, this is a great choice. I'll buy a drink in this bar.
Yeah. It's great. And it's one of those covers that is just that it's their song now. Sorry to Arrows, but this is a Joan Jett song now. You've been replaced.
Yeah.
That's it.
And it goes back to what you say about a simpler time when people weren't thinking about the lyrics. I mean, a song with dreadful lyrics, it's like if someone tried to come up with a parody of what a rock and roll song's lyrics would be. I love rock and roll, put another dime in the jukebox, baby. Appalling.
Yeah.
commits every cardinal sin, almost.
Honestly, yeah. And I agree, because that's one of my biggest pet peeves in music. If I hear a song refer to music in the song, I'm out. If a song is saying, turn the music up, no, that's your job. I'm not part of this.
What is this? Girls Aloud? Come on. Come on, mate.
Yeah.
But in the 70s, you could just do that. If the guitar was good enough.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. What was the name of that band? Feeder have a song. I think it's called Shout Out or Sing Out or Cry Out or something. And I remember seeing them live, and the lyrics are literally something to the effect of, if you want to hear this song, you won't have to wait too long. You just need a shout out. And I was just like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. Like, you're singing the song that you're referring to. I hate everything about it. Coldplay have one as well, where like I turned the music up. I got my records on. No, you're doing the music. You're not allowed to talk about the music. But Joan Jett gets away with it.
Corin Bailey Ray, there have been many offenders.
Yeah, there are too many. But I'm comfortable with Joan Jett doing it. Put another dime in the jukebox, baby. I will.
Absolutely.
I'm fine. Yeah. I also love rock and roll, and this is a rock and roll song.
And if anything, you're making me think about the fact that I do love rock and roll, Joan. So thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
Yeah. God fucking.
She's got more cash in the bank. More credit in the bank.
That's right. You know, what I often think about people, because obviously people slag off Coldplay a lot.
Yeah.
And I think, because people are like, oh, Coldplay, they're so shit or whatever. And I'm like, no, you see, the real problem with Coldplay is that they used to be not shit.
Yeah.
And they became, like, they demonstrated that they were able to make good albums. And then at some point in the mid-2000s, they were like, every album we make from now on will be unfathomably dog shit. It will be so bad. But it will be beloved by the most boring estate agent cunts you've ever met in your life.
Yeah.
And then it's like, but Parachutes was good.
Yeah, I did like Parachutes.
Yeah.
What's the turning point for you? Where did they lose you?
You know what? There's some good songs on X and Y, but you can see it starting to turn.
Okay.
Viva La Vida, appalling.
Okay.
I was like, what is that? This is like a musical soundtrack.
Right.
Like, okay. Yeah, I feel every song on it feels like a show tune.
Right, sure.
Another thing I fucking hate, show tunes. That kind of like the sort of the singing, but we're enunciating.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Like whenever they play like The Greatest Showman on the radio, like it's music. I'm like, no, this is dialogue from a film that happens to have music behind it.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you come to the circus? No, fuck off. I don't want to hear about the circus. I'm listening to I'm driving. Don't tell me about the circus.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Those are my views.
Yeah, those are your views on Coldplay. I think we covered there. Milo Xyloto for me was the turning point.
Later.
Yeah, a little bit later. It was just after Viva La Vida. I was still on board for Viva La Vida, and I actually really liked that album, and they had a little EP that came out with it as well. It had like remixes and like reworked versions of the songs as well. So still on board at that point. And then Milo Xyloto came out, and I listened to a couple of songs, and then that was me completely off board. Gone.
Yeah, when they became a, like, giving you a little glow stick wristband at the concert, and then Yeah.
I was neon butterflies, paper butterflies when I saw them. Thousands of them released in the stadium.
It's almost like Gwyneth Paltrow got all the cred in the divorce, you know? You know, Chris Martin's off doing that, like checking tickets at Glastonbury or whatever the fuck. And then you've got Gwyneth Paltrow who's doing interviews where she's like, yeah, you know, I keep crystals in my pussy and I smoke one cigarette a day as a treat. And I'm like, you know what? That is a woman who knows how to live. Fair play, Gwyneth.
Yeah, she's got it figured out.
Yeah.
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 No, agreed.
If I looked like that, I'd probably keep crystals in my pussy and smoke one cigarette a day too. What an advert for smoking one cigarette a day, Gwyneth Paltrow is. We should all be doing it.
Yeah. All right, song 9 is a song you'd sing at karaoke. So you went for Man, I Feel Like a Woman by Shania Twain.
A song with 2 exclamation points.
Yeah.
I mean, need I say more?
Yeah, baby.
Love this. The entire album, Come On Over by Shania Twain, all like 16 tracks. Great album. Hilariously kitschy. Again, we're in the territory of very bad lyrics.
Yes.
Some really bad lyrics on there, some real honkers, but great tunes. Slightly, you know, just country enough to make it fun without it being like, you know, I'm going to drive my truck to buy some beer. You know, no one needs that.
Sure.
There's a song on this album. I think it's Don't Be Stupid, which is just like, it's like 4 bars of instrumental, and then it's just Shania Twain goes, cool. And then it's another 4 bars of instrumental before the song starts. Perfect.
Yeah.
1998, what a year.
Yeah.
But yeah, Man, I Feel Like a Woman, amazing song to sing at karaoke if you are a man. Great stuff. Everyone loves it. It's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Actually did do this in the summer. My girlfriend and I duetted Man, I Feel Like a Woman by Shania Twain.
Nice.
She thought that it was a karaoke thing at the Fringe that my friend was organizing, and she was like, well, you've got to come and sing. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And then I think my girlfriend and her friend thought they were like trapping me into doing karaoke.
Right.
And I was like, no, I'm a professional performer. I'm going to eat this. Like, you just because this doesn't seem to you like something I would normally do. Do you think I'm going to do karaoke and not win? Like, do you think that's you're locked in here with me. Like, that was, I think.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I think she was, quite scared at certain points during the...
Wow, okay.
We're doing the whole, you know, I'm out front. I'm holding out the mic for the audience. You know, I've figured out a dance routine. She doesn't know it. I'm there, yeah. We're swinging the mic round on the cable. Do you know what I mean? This is not...
Right, yeah,
I'm like, this is not going to be a forgettable performance. So, yeah. And karaoke songs, very difficult to choose. People often make the mistake of choosing things too difficult to sing. Songs not enough people know.
Yeah.
You know? So there's a difficult sweet spot, and not everyone always gets it right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tricky one, yeah. I think this is a great one for that, 100%.
Yeah.
Was this the comedians doing karaoke thing at the Fringe? Is that what you're referring to?
I don't... No, what was it? It was just karaoke. But it was organized by Olga Koch, who's a comedian.
Right. Okay.
It may have been called Comedian and Karaoke, but then that feels like it's some kind of event. It was more like karaoke for comedians and their guests.
Okay. All right. Okay.
There weren't really like kind of non. It was all sort of like people who were like adjacent to the festival itself. There weren't really any just like festival goers there.
Okay. There was something I remember seeing something online at the during the Fringe with like a lot of comics that are like doing karaoke in the same place, and just as someone who likes comedy and does this show and has this category, I was obsessed with the choices and like the delivery of them. There were some
it great actually is Australia. The Melbourne Comedy Festival, there's 2 parties on the closing night. There's one that takes place at the Festival Club, which is kind of like the official, like the kind of the very like industry one,
right?
And then there's one at this pub called the Exford Arms, which is like, you're only allowed in there if you're a comedian or you're like with a comedian,
right?
on the last night, this is, and they have a karaoke thing set up, and it's just like just comedians going and doing karaoke one after another with incredibly varying degrees of skill, right. But like everyone is actually a performer, so it's very weird, kind of surreal, and the drinks are free,
right? Okay, great.
It's an absolutely mental event.
Oh.
And it's all the comedians who've chosen not to be at the more industry event.
Okay, sure. Right.
So yeah, it's quite the vibe in there.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite choices is Sam Peterson, the Australian comic. He does a podcast called Confessions, which I'm a big fan of. He chose for this category Chandelier by Sia, but he chose it because he can't sing it, because he is nowhere near getting those notes. But he's fully committed to the bit. And I'm a big fan of that as well. That's a great choice.
He's in that like nude, like skin suit thing.
yeah. He's got the fringe. Yeah. He's got the whole works. It's great. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, Shania Twain's a great shout. That instrumental that you're referring to in "Don't Be Stupid," where she says "cool," and then it just plays again. That meme of that being me after not paying attention to the conversation. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
That
I've not actually seen it, but I've always thought it would be great meme for
that. That's exactly what it's just me after not paying attention to 20 minutes of the conversation, then Shania Twain going, cool. And then just the music playing again. That is like that's part of our zeitgeist in my house that we refer to that all the time. Anytime you can see someone sober night, you're like, cool. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I've long loved that. Yeah, a great song intro.
Yeah,
zero fucks given from Shania.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You can tell the producers just be like, okay, and then Shania, you do something here, and cool, fine. Yeah. Print it.
Well, because people only came up with saying cool in about like 1996.
Yeah.
So, but at the time, it was still pretty novel. Now you know, like the Police say it, but at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, song 10 is a song that reminds you of a specific place. I'm gonna take a stab at this. I'm guessing the place is Russia, potentially. But is it Suka Lyubov?
Oh, yeah, because I... Suka Lyubov, yeah.
Lyubov by Mihai?
Mihai, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is like a Russian pop song, like a synth pop song from the 90s.
Yeah.
I thought I should put something Russian in the list, as I lived in Russia for a long time, and this is what would this be analogous to? It's a bit like Come On Eileen or something, not in terms of the genre of music, but I mean in terms of like the significance that it holds.
Like
I think
10 million plays on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, so I think if this comes on at like a Russian, like in a club or whatever, like people go mental for it because it's like an old, this is like a Russian wedding floor filler, you know?
Yeah, that's
but it's quite a like melancholy sort of, it's not like upbeat in the way that something like Come On Eileen is, but it's one of those kind of like real canonical, like everyone in Russia knows this song. Like you couldn't, and there are plenty of people in Russia who like don't know who the Beatles are, but
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Mikhail Sukhulubov, like people know the song. And it really reminds me of, there was a bar we used to go to in Moscow called Mayak, the Lighthouse, which is now closed, RIP, because everything good in Moscow closes eventually. But it was one of the most insane places I've ever been in my life. Like, it was, it looked like, you know, like one of the places they would have a meeting in, like Inglourious Basterds, like some 1940s French bistro or something.
Right, yeah.
It was a bar above a theatre that I guess had originally served kind of like theatre goers and actors and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Kind of no longer do that. In the day it was a restaurant, and then at night they would push the tables to the side and it would become like a bar with a dance floor, and you could only really drink vodka there. That was sort of what they did have, like some beers and wines, but people only and they would give you vodka, and then what you would drink with it was what they called mors, which was like a kind of like cherry juice, like a kind of like a pulpy cherry juice.
Okay.
So everyone is fucked in the way are when you're drinking vodka by the bottle.
Yeah.
But it had this clientele of like anyone from like late teens up to like people in their 70s.
Uh-huh.
But it was this very kind of like intelligentsia, kind of like hippie-ish sort of hangout. It really felt like one of those places that had been the same since the Soviet Union.
Sure.
And it was, I mean, like, I used to go till like 7 in the morning, but just, and they had a piano in there, and sometimes they would stop the music and some like mad old cunt would just start playing the piano, and people would say, like, really like a rare thing in modern cities, like a genuinely unique place. Sure. This was one of the songs that they would play in there, and it would like, yeah, be crazy. So yeah, it reminds me of that. Some good times in my early 20s, when I was able to stay up until 6 o'clock in the morning without dying.
Perfect. Great song. Great song. Like, I really, really liked it. Obviously, hadn't heard it before, but...
Yeah, I imagine it's probably rare you actually get introduced to something completely new.
I'd love to say that that's true, but no. My music listed before the show was very limited. But yeah, like I had no frame of reference for this whatsoever. So yeah, this would be completely out there for me. Also, I when I looked it up, I was trying to like Google Translate to like work out what the song was, because I couldn't find the right characters to type it into Spotify, and you know, like I was trying to copy and paste stuff. It was a whole thing. But
You see, I've fucked you there. I typed it in Cyrillic thinking that would make it easier, because then if you like copied and pasted and searched it, it would come up. Because obviously, once you transliterate, there's like a million different ways to spell it.
Yeah.
I've actually made it harder for you, so sorry about that.
No, it was my phone. It was like, I'll not get it. It's boring, but like it was anyway. Mm. It's fine. But when I googled it, I Google translated it, and then I found the song, because the song is translated to something like "Love is a bitch." Is that more or less?
Yeah, I mean, like "Sukha Lyubov," like literally, it just is. It's the word "bitch" and the word "love."
That's exactly what. Yeah. So when I Google translated it, was like "bitch love." I was like, oh, okay, this could go either way.
What is the chorus is something like, oh, like we'll show you where the pain is, it's sort on the wound, something like that.
Okay.
And then bitch love.
Bitch love.
Bitch love. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, song 11 is "The Song Reminds You of a Specific Person." So you went for "Telephone Line" by ELO.
Yeah, this really reminds me of my dad. My dad was a huge ELO fan. Okay. And I remember like always going on like weekend car trips places with my parents, and when my dad had like a Jaguar with a CD changer, and then he had this he had like a bunch of like kind of CDs in there that were never changed, you know, like it was like the same 8 CDs for like 10 years. And he had this ELO album, and I remember there's a lot of kind of ELO songs that I associate with my dad, but I think this one is kind of, it's really like a song I can vividly remember from like sitting in the car, in that way that like cars used to be in the 90s, where like they had like, you know, they had like walnut in it. you don't get walnut in a car now unless you buy like a Rolls Royce or something.
But
"Cream Leather" and "Walnut" and "Telephone Line" by ELO.
Wow, yeah. This is eerily similar to my dad's energy as well.
ELO, the Eagles.
Well, my
Tom Petty.
My dad thought that ELO were devil worshippers, so wasn't ELO. It was, as I said, Bruce Springsteen, Ray Cooter, that kind of stuff.
It's interesting to think that ELO are devil worshippers but be fine with Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, it was the backtracking thing. Do you remember this with like Led Zeppelin in particular,
or like playing stuff in reverse? And
yeah,
right, yeah, like the so, Judas Priest court case,
right? So ELO had one, and I can't remember what it was meant to say, but I remember the lead singer came out and said that it was scallop, because that's bollocks backwards, which I always quite like. Good. But yeah, I remember once I was listening to, it wasn't even, I don't remember which song it was. I know for a fact it wasn't Mr. Blue Sky, because that was the song I was listening to really loud in my room, and he came and told me off, because they love the devil. But yeah.
Evil Woman was actually fine.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah. Yeah,
that was actually, there was a really funny moment earlier where my girlfriend was trying to refer to the satanic panic, this very thing that we're currently discussing,
right?
And she accidentally called it the satanic panic, and I was having great fun imagining a version where like everyone was terrified of Carlos Santana. Like, he's got a black magic woman, some kind of witch. We've got to stop our children listening to this song about Maria.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Perfect. Do you listen to much ELO now, or is it just sort of, it's just like,
yeah,
your
a
dad's
bit.
Music?
I like ELO. I think, yeah, they're kind of one of those bands where I don't, I'm not like a huge ELO head, but like, right. I like them well enough, and they're sort of like, yeah, kind of like, yeah, it reminds me of my dad. It's like pleasing memories attached, but I'm not a, I'm more of like a, if I'm going like dad rock stuff, I'm more of like an Eagles guy.
Sure. Okay. Excellent. All right. Fair enough.
My cross to bear, the Eagle.
Someone's got to do it, man. All right. Song 12 is a song that motivates you. So you went for Girlfriend is Better by the Talking Heads.
I don't know. Well, I mean, I don't know what motivates you means in the context of a song, but I was like, what would be a song that's like, you know, kind of punchy, has a certain.
Yeah.
What would be a good driving song?
Right.
What do I think of? Yeah, and I like this one. And again, I thought it behoved me to slip the Talking Heads in as another band that I like a lot. But I don't claim to have a sort of deep back catalogue knowledge of the Talking Heads, but I like a lot of their songs. And there's a great synth part in this song towards the back end of the song, which I really like.
So, what did you opt for in terms of motivate you? Just like a song that makes you drive a little bit faster?
Yeah. Why not? Motivates me to get a speeding ticket. The best. I mean, if the police are listening, obviously, I never drive above the speed limit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that.
The police stopped listening after episode 7, I think it was. Not since the incident.
You pissed off Sting and they never came back.
Yeah, the rest of them stood down in solidarity. All right, cool. I'm just trying to get my head around the category. So it's just you literally just went out of the song that said like a little bit punchy is.
Yeah, because I wasn't really sure. Like, you know, kind of. I mean, maybe I think about things too philosophically. I was like, can a song really motivate you? Well, what song is aspirational? What am I? You know. So I wasn't quite sure, but yeah, I felt like this was sort of, you know, moving in the right direction.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, like, I've to be honest, when I wrote the category, it was more or less just sort of like gym bangers. I was thinking of songs that like I listen to when I'm walking with a little bit of purpose, like a main character energy kind of thing. But I've had it like interpreted in lots of different ways. I've had like people talk about how they've got songs that motivate them to focus on their mental health, or motivate them in terms of like how they perceive their art. There's been a lot of different like Perfect Places by Lord is a good example of that, because that idea that, you know, perfect doesn't exist. So like, you know, the pursuit of perfection can really get in the way of you accomplishing what you're set out to accomplish in terms of writing or producing something, whatever it is.
For example, choosing a song for the category.
Yeah, exactly.
A song that motivates you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes just go with Girlfriend is Better, and that's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. It's a great song. It's a great song, and I mean. If we're just going with that alone, that category of just like walking with a bit of purpose, it's got a good strut to it. So yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah, I like it. Talking Heads in general. Again, if you're not a Talking Heads fan, get on that.
Yeah,
some good stuff in there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, song 13 is a song that someone introduced you to. So you went with Paper Tiger by Spoon.
Yeah. I had never heard of Spoon at all, and along with one of the co-hosts of my podcast Trash Future, Nate, we make kind of parody songs for the podcast, which have gotten very high concept at this point, and we are both kind of, I think, we're both very into music and playing music as teenagers, albeit not very successfully. And it kind of scratches an itch in terms of, you know, doing music stuff, but never having to be serious about it in a way where someone could be like, well, I don't think those lyrics are very good, because every lyric we write is a joke. So who is owned now? It is you, the listener. So what we try and do is write songs that are genuinely very good, but with the stupidest possible lyrics. And as a result, we're often sending each other reference points, like songs that we like or we think would work as an idea in a song. And generally speaking, Nate is more the melody guy and I'm more the lyrics guy. But Nate is also American, so he has quite a different frame of reference for, like, you know, a lot of your, like, you know, your famous band's frame of reference is the same, but your, like, kind of less well-known band's frame of reference is very different.
Right.
And so, like, I think Spoon are a band that were, like, much more famous in America than they ever were in Europe.
Sure.
And so I'd never heard this album before. And he bought me this album on CD from eBay because he knew that I listened to CDs in my car. I liked the album. But I think my favorite song on the album was this song, which is probably the song that sounds the least like the other songs on the album.
Right, sure.
Yeah, if that makes sense. This song is kind of like a, I don't know. It's strange. I don't know how to. I don't know what genre you would even call it.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one. It took me a few lessons to get my head around it, to be honest. But it's a good one. I like it. Very, very sweet to buy a CD on eBay. Your car, quite like that.
Yeah, Nate quite often buys me CDs. Mainly because he wants me to, you know, it's like a present for me, but it's also a present for him because he wants me to he wants to make me listen to whatever it is. And sometimes the CDs he buys me are great, and I'm like, that was great, thank you.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Recently, he bought me 3 CDs, which is very kind of him.
Oh, yeah.
And he bought me Violator by Depeche Mode, which is a fun album.
Yeah.
And he bought me Station to Station by David Bowie. And I listened to that and I was like, of all of the David Bowie albums, this has got to be the most unlistenable. Like, this is. But it's so Nate to genuinely love that album the most, and it's not a pretension. It's not that he feels like that would be the coolest one to like. It's that he genuinely, he's like, what a great album. And I listen to it and I'm like, you know, Golden Years is okay, I guess.
Excellent. So would you still listen to Spoon now, or is it
It's saved on the hard drive in the car, you know.
Excellent.
It's in circulation.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's on the list. I would say on the whole, Nate has a pretty good hit rate.
Okay.
He got me an album by the Smashing Pumpkins, which was a lot of fun as well.
Great.
That was longer ago.
Excellent.
Sort of like what if the 1975 were doing like rock? They have a lot of songs that sound pretty similar, but quite fun, you know. Sometimes we're just in a bad mood, just put on the Smashing Pumpkins in the car, great.
Yeah. I just in my head, I've just got a little bit obsessed with this system that you have in the car. So if it writes the CD into the hard drive, do you have to go? Do you have to have the whole album, or can you put like pick one song and then it goes into a playlist, or is it just albums?
It has to be the whole album. So I've basically got this like library of
music
in the car, which is sorted by album, and you can.
Right. Okay.
But what's crazy is there's like stuff from every previous owner of the car.
Oh shit. Yeah.
Of which there are a few, so they're like random, but it's done. It's sorted in order of like how recently it was added. So like all my stuff is like at the bottom.
Okay. It's at the bottom, right? So you have to go through everyone else's stuff to find
and
your
I'm
stuff.
Sure that there's stuff. I mean, the vast majority of the stuff that's been added is me, because I think most people who've owned this car are just like, well, I have Spotify, so why would I? Whereas I don't have Spotify, so I've long been something about Spotify rubbed me up the wrong way early on, and I was like, I will never get Spotify, and I never have.
Good for you.
And I tell you what, it pisses off people I know no end. They're like, can I send you this on Spotify? I'm like, no, cunt. Because I don't know.
No, buy me the CD.
And they're like, are you on Apple Music? And I'm like, also no. I do have iTunes. I've got an iTunes library. I've got music saved on the memory of my phone. I've got that.
Fucking iTunes. So, like, what you hear is a decent user experience, is what I'm hearing.
It's just the whole thing. I just think it's so... Something is just so wrong about it. I think I had, like, this initial... I mean, I get that it's convenient.
Yeah.
But I think I had this initial something about it, like, reviled me.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, I like to, like, buy a song and then have it, or like, a CD or whatever. And sure. then... have a collection of things that expands rather than like an eternally transient, like, oh, well, I'll listen to that and then see.
Yeah.
Because I feel like music is not like that. Like, it works well as a model for like Netflix, because people like, you know, they watch things and then they don't often watch them again, or rarely, you know, but music isn't like that. And then, you know, Netflix, like, they commission a thing and they buy it, and then, you know, people, and so the sort of the economics of it more or less makes sense. Yeah. Whereas with Spotify, it's like, it's proved to be a disaster for musicians and stuff, because,
true.
You know, they don't, the economics of the system simply don't work as it's constant. And yeah, just something about it at the time, I was just like, this doesn't, nah. I was like, nah, this isn't gonna do it for me.
Yeah.
Piracy was better than this. Let's go back to piracy. That's my
Amen.
Big
Amen.
Yeah.
Thing is, I think you're right, but iTunes was just god awful to navigate. It's just like for a user, just horrible. User interface is just awful. You have to like literally scroll through everything to find the stuff you want. Shocking. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, it's not the best.
But yeah, all right. Song 14 is a song you wouldn't expect to like. So you went for Crying by Roy Orbison.
Yeah. Yeah, Roy Orbison. Just an old man.
Yep.
there's something very if you're not familiar with Roy Orbison, the listener, I feel like Pretty Woman is the song everyone knows.
Yep.
Which is a good tune. But yeah, there is some quite good... The thing about Roy Orbison is, even if you don't know, if you've heard one Roy Orbison song, you will be able to recognize any other Roy Orbison song, because the man has such a peculiar voice.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm crying over you. Yeah, it's like very... but there's something, I don't know, there's something kind of charming about Roy Orbison in a way. Like, it feels like something like your nan would be listening to, but there's a...
Yeah.
It's not as like... I don't know, like, you listen to... When you... Most music that's that old is so unlistenably bad.
Right.
Like, it's like they worked out how to make music in about 1959.
Yeah.
And anything... I mean, Roy Orbison, to be fair, Roy Orbison isn't quite that old, I don't think. It's not as old as it seems. It's like early 60s, I think.
Sure.
But yeah, the 60s is regarded as like this golden era of music, and people forget how shit so much of it was. Like, do you ever listen to that show on Radio 2 where it's like the chart this week in like whatever year?
Oh, yeah.
And they just play stuff. And I like, honestly, any time when it's in the 60s, you're like, what the fuck were people smoking in the 60s? It's like, oh, here's Davy D and the Grandmothers with their song Doing the Washing Up. And you're like, what? And then people are like, oh, yeah, the 60s, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. And it's like, no, it was fucking Dave D and the Grandmas and their hit song Washing Up. That was what most of that shit was. Anyway, my point is, Roy Orbison, surprisingly good. For a weird man with a weird voice, There's something about Crying. It's got like a kitschy charm.
Yeah. I love his voice. I think it's one of those voices where it just feels very authentic. And again, at the risk of being like old man yells at cloud, I think there is this obsession with modern day pop music that the voice has to be exactly right, has to be perfect, which just makes everything just that little bit duller. There's not really any kind of like real emotional, and there's no like, there's not many weird voices out there at the minute.
Roy Orbison's a warbler.
Yeah, and there's a lot, like, you get a lot of like storytelling, a lot of emotion from his voice. Like, you can feel a lot of what he's saying, even if it's not like a traditionally good voice. Like, you still feel a lot more than I would from like the perfected auto-tune version of it.
Yeah, auto-tuned Roy Orbison is a terrifying thought. Imagine, like, the Roy, what if Roy Orbison was Jason Derulo?
There's an AI somewhere that will sort that, and yeah, I hear.
Or what if Jason Derulo was Roy Orbison?
Oh yeah,
yeah. There's a terrifying thought. I'm now just thinking of a Jason Derulo song that I know well enough to approximate what that would be like, but I'm struggling.
I can't think of any either. Or I just remember that he sings Jason Derulo.
Jason Derulo. Yeah. And thank you very much to Jordan Sparks for letting us all know that he does in fact say that during sex. So
is that a thing?
Jordan Sparks has done one thing apart from the song No Air, which is tell us all that Jason Derulo apparently sings his own name during sex. Yeah, she said that in an interview. I mean, obviously we can't say that. I guess Jason Derulo allegedly sings his own name during sex.
Yeah. I want that to be true. That's great. All right, song 15 is a song you think everyone should listen to. So you went for Son of a Preacher Man by Dusty Springfield.
Yeah. What a song.
Yeah.
What a great song. I often, it's one of those songs again which I wouldn't often put on, but when it does come on, it's so I think again, since I guess making some music of my own in however an amateurish way, I think I'm much more of a student than I ever used to be of good song composition, because you think about the mistakes that you have made.
Right, sure.
And I think Son of a Preacher Man is a great example of all of the elements being used sparingly and stylishly to exactly the correct degree.
Yeah.
There's this amazing, like, electric piano / electric organ thing at the start. It's so good, and you want more of it, but it's used for the intro and it never comes back.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, imagine writing something that good and then being like, no, that should just be the start of the song, and then we won't overuse it, we won't kill it.
Yeah.
We won't overdo it.
Yeah.
But that's like but you know, they were right. God damn them, they were right. And so and Dusty Springfield has such a great kind of like ethereal voice. And the song itself, an example of good lyrics. It's such a strange, I don't often like a storytelling song, but there are occasional exceptions. Like, I think this is one. And then songs which are like so knowing, like something like A Boy Named Sue by Johnny Cash. It so leans into being like a stupid, like old wives' tale set to music. It's almost like a street joke that someone has padded out and put music to. But songs transcend the natural limitation of don't write a story put music behind it.
Yeah. It's a great song. I love getting songs like this for this category, where for me this is a song that is so ubiquitous that I would never choose to listen to it. Like, I know this song. Like, I would never seek it out because I've heard it a million times before. But God, actually sitting down and listening to it, it's great. It's such a great song. And I, that's what I was focused on as well. Like, there's so many different elements to it that are just like, just little stings and little moments. And it's just beautifully written. And her voice is incredible. The whole thing is amazing. And obviously that's not a hot take, but like,
no, there are some, but it's a song that everyone has heard, but you don't often listen to.
Yeah, that's
precisely
the thing.
For that reason.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But I see, it's gorgeous. It's so good.
Yeah, I'm a fan. You know what? Stick me down as a Dusty Springfield fan.
I'm putting it out there. It's very, very, very brave of you, Miller.
Dusty, if you're listening,
she is a fan.
Let's talk.
Yeah, Keane and the Police. No, Dusty. No. Yes. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that's as good a note as any to end on there. So, do you have anything you want to plug or promote while I have you?
Oh, I have so many podcasts. You can listen to me on the podcast Trash Future, which is a comedy show about politics. Masters of Our Domain, which is a comedy show about the 90s sitcom Seinfeld. and also a new project called Glue Factory, which is a kind of riffs comedy platform that we're doing as a video podcast on YouTube with Riley from Trash Future and the comedians Pierre Novelli and Olga Koch, which is a lot of fun. And also, if you're listening to this in Australia, which maybe some of you are, I'm on tour in Australia in March and April. So please buy tickets to that on my website, mylewebbles.co.uk. I'm a stand-up comedian, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that.
I said
that's
that
actually what I do.
Yeah.
Apart from being covered. Dusty Springfield's number one super fan,
yeah.
I am a stand-up comedian in my spare time. When I have time off from, you know, my maintaining my Dusty Springfield shrine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think most of being a Dusty Springfield fan is arguing with Alexander Burke fans online.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they think she's the new Dusty. Come on. She could barely fuck the son of a deacon. Much less the son of a preacher, man. Come now. She'd be fortunate to get, you know, the son of a choir boy.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And that is it for episode 85 of Mixtape and Identity. Thank you so much for listening. Go and check out Milo wherever you can. If you're in Australia and you're listening to this close to the release, Milo is in Australia right now. He's on tour there. So if you can, go and check him out. Go and check him out. If not, as I said at the start of the show, he's got plenty of podcasts. They're all hilarious. Just go and check them out. All the links are in the description of the podcast. If you like this show and you want to support it, you can do that in a number of different ways. You can do that financially if you want to throw us a couple quid or a couple bucks for an episode that you've enjoyed. There is a coffee link in the description of the podcast. And if you're not in a position to do that, that's absolutely fine, completely understandable. Please do try to support the show in other ways. Leave a review, rate it, tell your friends, share it on social media, all that good stuff. Just keeps the show going, keeps the quality of guests high. Yeah, everybody wins. I'll be back next week for episode 86. So in the meantime, look after yourselves. And we'll speak to you then.